Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Right now in Massachusetts, for-profit colleges are facing big questions, new regulations, and lawsuits. The state attorney general is investigating about a dozen of them amidst charges of low graduation rates and deceptive sales tactics that leave students mired in debt. Consider the case of Mike DiGiacomo. He's an Army veteran who lives in Randolph, who wanted to get a degree in animation and learn how to design video games. He enrolled in two for-profit schools, first Gibbs College in Boston, and then the New England Institute of Art, where he hoped to get a bachelor's degree. DiGiacomo says the schools made him a series of promises, including that they could get him a paid internship and contacts with the video game industry. That didn't happen. Instead, DiGiacomo ended up with just an associate's degree, no job, and a whole lot of debt.
I was being pressured a lot to sign for loans, like getting pulled out of class and told, you know, hey, you gotta sign this or you can't go back to class. He didn't really have time to really review the documentation. They would pressure you, so to speak. Now, granted, I probably should have done more research on that, but...
Well, Mike, how much money do you owe in total on your education loans?
I would say, federal student loan-wise, about $30,000. And private student loan-wise, which I didn't even know I had until the deferment period ended, that is about $60,000. But now with, like, fees and probably around, you know, $96,000.
Did you have any idea that you were getting in that deeply in debt?
No, I did not.
Well, Mike, I know it's got to be a tough situation you're in, being in debt more than $90,000 and only an associate's degree to show for it.
In hindsight, it's my biggest regret in life. And I mean, how many people do you know that can say they regret going to college?
And Mike, my heart goes out to you, and I'm sure people, anyone listening, is going to feel the same way. But I do have to sort of ask this question because it seems like one of the lessons of your story, you know, you should have been more aware, perhaps, of what you were signing and what you
exactly
were agreeing to. I mean, that seems to be a part of what happened here as well.
Yes. I mean, if I had the proper guidance, I would have known to look at the loan paperwork better. At the speed they had us enrolling in, you could have signed for nuclear weapons and not realize it in the time they gave you to fully review documentation. Their programs are basically designed to tap on that impulse and extract the government money, and that's about it.
All right. Well, Mike DiGiacomo, thank you very much for talking to us. We appreciate it. And good luck to you.
Thanks.
That's Mike DiGiacomo of Randolph. We reached out, by the way, to the New England Institute of Art to talk to them about Mike DiGiacomo's story. The school declined to comment. Gibbs College released a written statement regarding DiGiacomo, saying the school has never offered a degree in animation and they do not promise to connect students with industry contacts. But his story is just one of many that raise questions about for-profit colleges at a time when they're facing a lot of scrutiny over high rates of debt and low rates of graduation and employment. And we're going to talk about that right now. Joining us is David Deming. He's an associate professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and he's with us now. David, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Also in the studio, Toby Merrill. She's an attorney and senior clinical fellow at the Predatory Lending Practice at the Legal Services Center of Harvard Law School. Toby Merrill, good to have you.
Thank you.
And we did reach out, by the way, to a number of for-profit colleges, but they declined to participate today. Also, the Massachusetts Association of Private Career Schools, a trade group representing for-profit colleges, was scheduled to join us for this discussion, but at the last minute, they pulled out, citing the organization's ongoing challenge to Attorney General Martha Coakley's proposed regulation. So that's where we are right now. But listeners, we'd like to hear from you. Have you attended for-profit colleges? Was your experience positive, negative? Are you an employer? What do you think when you see a for-profit college on an applicant's resume? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Toby Merrill, let me just start with you. Mike DiGiacomo's story, how common is that?
Well, clearly he has an extraordinary amount of debt, and I would like to be able to say that it's unusual, but I actually see tons of people who owe as much or more money than as he does. Also, in terms of not understanding what he was getting into and being pressured to enroll very quickly, those are things that I also hear all the time from students, really being misled about what what they were getting and what they could expect in the future.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, you heard the question that I asked him, and I was sincere when I said my heart goes out to him because it sounds like he's in an awful situation. On the other hand, to what extent is he responsible for the fact that he just didn't read the fine print there and signed these documents?
Well, of course, we all sign a lot of documents that we don't read, and I wouldn't say that that determines the answer to your question one way or another. What I will say is that there are systems set up to get people to sign things that they don't understand or that they couldn't understand either within the time given or ever. Hmm. And we saw that in the subprime mortgage crisis, right? Like, why would people buy houses that they couldn't afford or take out these mortgages that had exploding rates that they would never be able to pay at the time when the rate changed? And the clear conclusion is there were forces outside of the people pulling them into these transactions that were against their interests. And that's what I hear over and over. You know, I got a stack 6 inches high of paper and I signed it in half an hour and I was 17 and I was a single mom and there was just no way that I was going to be able to understand. And they just said, it's fine and it's not going to cost you anything. And I hear that every day.
Every day. David Deming, let me come to you. We heard Mike DiGiacomo there. He spent 3 years in the Army, 5 years in the Army National Guard. I want to ask you if you can lay out, just sort of give us a sense of who attends for-profit colleges for the most part. Is it easy to sort of paint a portrait of who's there?
Well, I think it's easy to paint a portrait on average. I mean, I think one thing I'll say is that there's a lot of variation in who attends what types of schools within the for-profit sector. But in general, it's disproportionately first-generation college students, single parents. People who attend for-profit colleges are less likely to have a traditional high school diploma and more likely to have a GED. And so it's students who are more disadvantaged. Often it's people who don't have a lot of experience with the college situation, maybe students who are more susceptible to high pressure tactics like the ones that have been alleged in the Attorney General's lawsuit. So for sure, that's the population that for-profit colleges are targeting. On the other hand, they'll say, you know, the other way you can say that is they're serving students who would otherwise not be served by the public sector or by more selective, for example, nonprofit schools. And so that's really where the issue lies.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. And again, we did mention that we were going to have Jim Beloga on the show. He's president of the board of directors of the Massachusetts Association of Private Career Schools. He pulled out at the last minute because of this situation with the attorney general. But he made the point to my producer in a sort of pre-interview that was on the record that for-profits provide great opportunities to connect with the employment community, in particular for a population that might be excluded from traditional colleges. Toby, what do you buy that?
Well, I mean, I think the numbers speak for themselves in terms of both graduation and employment rates at for-profit schools. And I think to the extent that the argument is we serve a population that's more difficult to serve, that certainly puts the onus on the schools doing that serving to make sure that they're prepared to help those students succeed.
Yeah. David, I'd love to ask you, one of the criticisms that we're hearing about for-profit school is that the graduation rates are low. Toby just made reference to that. According to the National Center for Education Statistics, about 33% of freshmen who entered for-profit colleges in 2006 had graduated by 2012. Does that suggest a red flag to you?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, I would say actually what you want to look at is not just graduation rates, because in fact, graduation rates at community colleges are also not particularly high. What you really want to look at is the fact that students are taking on much more debt for the same education. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, basically, if you have the same, even if you had the same graduation rates and you had the same levels of employment and earnings after graduation, if you've got three times or four times as much debt, it's not as good of an investment. And so I think that's really where, you know, if students go to community colleges for a year and drop out, but they don't have much debt, you know, they're still foregoing some earnings by going to school, but it's not as big of a problem as in the case of Michael, where there's a $90,000 of debt. And so that's really, it's kind of the benefit cost ratio for students that's really the issue.
Hmm. Toby, you compared what's happening at for-profit colleges to the mortgage crisis when a lot of folks were sort of sucked into mortgages that they obviously couldn't afford. Is it really the same dynamic?
I think there are a lot of similarities,
yeah.
Especially in terms of sales and marketing, also in terms of pulling people who had, you know, maybe historically or traditionally been excluded from a given market into that market and sort of letting happen to them what may. Just a real disregard for the well-being of individuals and communities.
Listeners, we're talking about for-profit colleges. We'd love to hear from you if you've attended one. We'd love to hear about your experience there. Or if you're an employer, what do you think when you see a for-profit college on an applicant's resume? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're doing this conversation as the Attorney General's Office in Massachusetts is investigating for-profit colleges. And we're going to get into the particulars of that investigation in a moment. But let's take a call. Jane is calling from Brookline. Jane, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I went to a four-year college, and I'm the first in my family to graduate from college. So when I went to college, I didn't have any guidance. I did all of the, you know, signing of documents on my own. It was up to me to make it happen financially because I didn't have any help from my family. And I ended up taking out a lot of loans, federal and private.
And Jane, I'm just going to jump in because I just want to be absolutely clear about something you said. You said you went to a four-year college, but you went to a four-year for-profit college. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
I went to school in Boston.
Okay.
Yep, a for-profit college. Graduated with a music degree, which I'm grateful for the education, but I'm paying off a lot in student loans. And like your the guest that was on there, or maybe it was a caller, I just didn't have a lot of awareness. And had I really known what I was getting into financially, I would have definitely, sought another path.
Sure.
I have a, yeah.
Go ahead. I was just curious, Jane, you said you ended up in a lot of debt. Can I ask how much for a four-year education?
Oh, it's embarrassing. I'll say it's over $150,000.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. Yeah. And how did it work out in terms of employment?
Oh, the return on my investment was it wasn't good at all. I'm an entrepreneur now.
Yeah.
And I am making my own way, which is great. I learned a lot about money, a lot about finances, in the process. It really woke me up to the whole world of money. I just had no idea, really, how it worked.
Well,
so I have learned. But also, I just wanted to say that my strategy with my son when he goes to college is that we are going to send him to a two-year college, a community college, and pay for it outright. We will not be taking out loans. Hopefully, then, after the 2 years, he can get a scholarship. But we are not going to let him take on student debt, and we are not going to be taking on any more student debt.
All right, Jane. Well, thanks so much for sharing that story with us. David Deming, when I hear stories like that, we heard it one similar at the beginning of the show from Mr. DiGiacomo, but $150,000, and clearly not really aware that she was getting in that deeply. This seems to be sort of typical of the complaints, or that there are a lot of these complaints that we're hearing from these colleges.
Right. So, I mean, I guess I would certainly empathize with the caller. I would focus more, as a matter of policy, I would focus more on the benefits than the costs. In other words, there's lots of people. You know, the solution is not to say we should never let students borrow money when they go to school, because it's an investment that pays off for most people and pays off in a lot of situations, but just doesn't pay off for everyone. And so what we need is to have a system of providing better information to students and not, you know, avoiding these high-pressure sales tactic, et cetera, so people can make informed decisions about whether a particular investment is wise for them. You know, students who go to medical school will often borrow over $100,000 to get a degree, but that's a degree that pays off, and so we don't have a public outrage about it. It's really the low benefits and high cost that make this an issue.
Let's go to Blaine, who's calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Blaine, you're on the air. Hi, Blaine. Do we have you? No.
Hello?
Yeah, Blaine, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, I'm not Blaine, but I'll go ahead and ask my question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tell me who you are and then ask your question.
I'm Robert from Fall River.
Robert from Fall River. Okay. Go ahead, Robert. Good to have you.
Very, very interesting talk. Listen, I'm just wondering, you know, we think about all the debt and students sort of amounting all this debt, not only from the for-profit colleges, but also from just traditional colleges and universities. I'm just wondering what this is going to mean for our economy further down the line. You would have all these people sort of evolving into with all this debt and the inability to contribute to the economy, and what type of economic impact it's going to have on us, and what kind of social impact it's going to have on us.
Robert, these are really, really important questions, and absolutely grateful that you put them on the table. Just for the time being, we're going to focus specifically on for-profit colleges, because the issue of student debt, of course, is out there, and it's one that we talk a lot about. David, I want to come to you because we mentioned that the Attorney General's office is investigating for-profit colleges. What's behind this investigation, and where do you think it's likely to lead?
Sure. So there was a lawsuit. The Attorney General filed a lawsuit in April against Corinthian colleges and then issued some new regulations in June, you know, aimed at things like, you know, making sure there's a waiting period for students to take on loans, increasing the level of information that students have, trying to stop deceptive recruiting practices, and then the for-profit. I mean, I think there's a lawsuit by the For-Profit College Association. I don't know if I'm going to get the details right, back against the Attorney General. And so this is an ongoing process. And certainly some of the, I mean, from my perspective, some of the, these are allegations, but if they're true, they're certainly things that we need to address. You know, I think some of the things that are happening in some situations are really quite, quite remarkable in a bad way. So, you know, you've got, you know, and you, if you've seen the Government Accountability Office at the federal level, they did an undercover investigation of high-pressure recruiting tactics at for-profits where they saw many of these things happening too. And so to the extent that that's happening, that's something that clearly needs to stop. On the other hand, I want to sound a note of caution that we can kind of sue our way out of this situation as a society. And the reason is because, you know, we place such a premium on you know, people getting more education, you know, increasing the number of, you know, the level of college education, and, you know, that's what employers want. That's what people hear all the time. And yet we're kind of, we're not funding certainly public education at the same level we used to. And so the question is how, if we want everyone to go to college, how are we going to pay for it? And I think for-profit colleges have really stepped into this space and educated students who are not being educated by the public sector. And so that's, anytime you restrict, you know, basically, if you're going to make the environment more hostile for these types of schools, you're also going to mean, it's also going to mean that fewer people go to college. And I think that's something that we have to wrestle with.
Hmm. Toby Merrill, do you, I'd love you to respond to that, because, I mean, you obviously represent people who have sort of been taken to the cleaners, arguably or allegedly, by these schools. But how do you respond to David's point that they are providing an important opportunity for people who can't get into traditional colleges?
Well, I would go back to the portion of the conversation you were having both with me and with David a few minutes ago,
yeah,
which is, if you have, I think you said, a 33% graduation rate, you know, a really outsized default rate, so people are being unable to pay back their loans, it's not much of a service to step into an area and provide some portion of an education that then leaves people without whatever credential they were going for and enormously indebted.
Sure. So what has to happen? What kind of regulations, more regulations, would you like to see?
Well, I think the Attorney General's regulations were a great start. I mean, basically, no lying to students, no cheating students, no stealing from students. Those are the sorts of things that schools absolutely should not be doing. We also need a lot more enforcement. So, as you said, the Attorney General is apparently investigating a number of schools. We really need law enforcement to step in and make sure that these are not being these regulations are not being broken by the schools.
Well, it's a really fascinating story. I want to thank both my guests. Toby Merrill is an attorney and senior clinical fellow at the Predatory Lending Practices at the Legal Services Center at Harvard Law School. Toby Merrill, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And David Deming, associate professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's a faculty research fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research. David Deming, thank you as well.
Thanks very much for having me.
Listeners, stay with us. A lot more coming up, including a Boston surgeon with a new approach to fix one of the most common knee injuries, the ACL tear. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.